Join the National U Institute for our Foundations of Freedom Regional Seminars in California. We're stopping in Newport Beach on April 30th and then in San Jose on May 1st. These half-day conferences take place from 2:30 to 6:30 p.m. and feature me, Rich Lowry, and Ramesh Panuru, along with Judge Janice Rogers Brown, John Yu of Berkeley Law, and Will Swaim of the California Policy Center. Register at nrinstitute.org. That's nrinstitute.org. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Great Books Podcast. Today we'll talk about Burmese Days by George Orwell. I'm your host, John J. Miller of National Review, and you're listening to a production of National Review. Our guest is Paul Theroux, who is the author of many books, including novels such as The Mosquito Coast and The Bad Angel Brothers, and travelogues such as The Great Railway Bazaar, which is about Asia, and On the Plain of Snakes, which is about Mexico. His brand new novel is Burma Sahib, a fictionalized account of the young George Orwell. He joins us by Zoom from Hawaii as we record from Hillsdale College's campus radio station, WRFH in Michigan. Paul, welcome to the Great Books Podcast.
Great to be with you, John.
Why is Burmese Days by George Orwell a great book?
I don't think it's a great book. It's a very good book. It's a very good book because it's a portrait of Burma in 1920, roughly the early 20s. It's not a great book because George Orwell didn't put himself into it. George Orwell was a policeman. The main character of Burmese Days is a timber worker called John Flory. He's kind of jaundiced, 45 so years old, loveless, rejected in love. And he's in a small riverside town on the Irrawaddy River. And it's comic because there are some Burmese characters feuding in it, an Indian and a Burmese. I think being a first novel, Orwell was trying to write a kind of H.G. Wells novel. He loved H.G. Wells. He said that anyone born after 1900 was a kind of Wells character. He didn't put himself into it. I mean, he was a policeman. There's only one policeman in the book, and it's an older man who's a very decent guy. It's the only book, the only novel about Burma that's any good, I should say. I'm trying to think if there's other. There are other good books about Burma by Maurice Collis, and Somerset Maugham wrote one called The Gentleman in the Parlor, but there's no novels that I know of. So in other words, I don't mean to quibble, but it's not great. I think that it's an extremely good first novel, but Orwell wrote much better books later. And this was the first effort, and he did the best he could. But he started working on it when he was still in Burma, when he was still a policeman. And maybe that was a disincentive, because he was a policeman called Blair, Eric Blair, the policeman, and he was writing this book in Burma. He started in Burma, and then after Burma, he was still working on it. He probably wanted to disguise himself. It first appeared in the United States before Britain, because the British publishers thought it might be libelous. It was libelous. I mean, there are a number of people in the book who could easily be identified as residents of this small town. The town was called Katha. In the book, it's called Kyokada. But Katha was where Eric Blair, the policeman, worked for about 8 months in 1927, and it was his last job. After that, he quit and went back. The book itself, since you asked, has a lot to recommend it. You get a great sense of the landscape. You get a sense of the river, of life on the river, of Burmese traditions, dances, music, the food. You get a great glimpse of club life there, how dreary it was. English club life. Clubs are segregated. They wouldn't allow Burmese to join. The guys are racist. They use racist language all the time. I mean, this book would probably cause, what's it called in universities? Curriculum-based trauma. So if you're here, if you're connected with a university and they were reading this book, they would say, this is very traumatic, sir. We can't read it. The language is too upsetting. But that's Burmese days for me.
We're going to talk about all that, the story and its characters, George Orwell's time in Burma when he was known as Eric Blair. That's his real name. George Orwell was a pen name. We'll talk about his time in Burma and how it shaped him. Also, Paul's new novel about this period called Burma Sahib and more. Paul, I want to start with a line that occurs well into Burmese days. You use it as an epigraph for your novel, Burma Sahib, and a character speaks it actually in the novel once you're a little bit into it. Orwell in Burmese days writes it in reference to a character who is a young woman, but it's hard to read it and not think of George Orwell. The quote is this: "There's a period in everyone's life when his character is fixed forever," unquote. Do you think George Orwell's character was fixed forever in Burma?
I do think it was probably the most significant experience he had. He was 19 years old when he went to Burma. He graduated from Eton College. He did not go to Oxford like his friends. He was at Eton with a number of people, Christopher Hollis, Cyril Connolly. Both of them became writers. A man called Runciman, a historian, wrote about the Crusades. All those guys went to Oxford. Orwell didn't. Blair didn't. Blair's father had been in the Indian civil service. He was an opium agent in Bengal, in eastern India. His father, I think, put pressure on him to go. Was it the most significant experience? I think it was the most formative. I think his character was formed. Here's why. So he's there 5 years. What happened to Eric Blair after he left? So he was there. He was a good policeman. I mean, everything. He whipped people. He arrested people. He supervised hangings. He got drunk at the club. He got into trouble. He shot an elephant and disgracefully shot an elephant. So he did all that. He did all the things, good, bad, and indifferent, that a policeman would do in Burma in the 1920s. Then he left. And what happened to him? He became a dishwasher in Paris and a tramp in London. If there's a greater sense of atonement, of shame, I don't know what it would be. I mean, lots of people worked in India and Burma as civil servants, or Africa, a lot of colonialists, British colonialists. Afterwards, they did not become dishwashers, I think, to a person, but he did. So in a way, you could say what happened to him afterwards is proof of what a powerful experience it was, how ashamed he was of doing what he did. And it turned him, I mean, he was a colonial. He was paid, he had servants, he had power, he had a gun, he had a truncheon, he had a lot of authority, he had a lot of men under him. I mean, in Mandalay, he had 120 men under him. When he was in these little posts, he had 20 or 30 police constables under him, you know, arresting people for opium, for murder, for rape and whatnot. So he, you know, he's just a young guy, 19 when he started, in his early 20s. But as a 20, 21-year-old, he had the run of the place. He could go to brothels. He could find prostitutes. He could order his servants around, and he could order his men around. And there's a guy with a lot of authority. What happens? He quits and becomes a dishwasher. So I think he became a colonial. He went from being colonial to being a committed anti-colonial. And I think you don't need any more proof than that. He also, I think probably more than that, more particular, he became anti-authoritarian. So his whole life after that, and he died young, you know, he was only 46 when he died. So he only lived another 20 years. But for the next 20 years, he was violently anti-authoritarian. He joined the Trotskyite Brigade in the Spanish Civil War. That's anti-authoritarian. He was a warden, air raid warden in London, during the war. That's anti-authoritarian, you know, against the Nazis and whatnot. And he wrote constantly about people in authority and the refinements of language. And of course, his great anti-authoritarian book was 1984. I mean, that's a book in which it's about a despotism. Well, he said, colonialism, imperialism is a despotism. The Catholic Church is a despotism. He was very anti-Catholic. And of course, a dictatorship, the Soviet Union was his bête noire, that is a despotism. So that's his character. I mean, his anti-authoritarian character was formed all those years ago when he was in his early 20s. He was born in 1903. You know, 1923, he's 20 years old. He hated authority and fought against it.
He was an authority figure himself, of course, as a policeman in Burma. He was there from 1922 to 1927. In Burmese days, this first novel published in 1934, his main character, John Flory, who you mentioned, is also a critic of British colonialism. He admired Burma. He admired the people in a lot of ways. And he gets into arguments with another character who's an Indian doctor, Dr. Veeraswamy, who actually defends British rule in Burma. You get the native or the local who's actually defending British rule, arguing with the British guy. What did George Orwell or Eric Blair see in Burma? What did he see, what did he experience that made him turn against colonialism?
Well, later, Orwell is famous for saying, imperialism is a racket. The empire was a racket. It's a racket because they were exploiting locals. They were exploiting the cotton industry. In Burma, there were rubies, so gems, they were taking them out. They had oil, the Burma Oil Company. So it's exploitation. That's the first thing. Secondly, exploiting people, exploiting resources, exploiting human resources, the human labor, underpaying them. Exploiting them in terms of law, that he Orwell famously said there's two laws, law for the sahib and the law for the native. And the natives, it came down much harder on Burmese or on Indians. So he saw that there's two systems. The other is racist, that there were lots of things that, I mean, the Burmese couldn't join the clubs, for example. They didn't rise in the police. The police was entirely staffed at the higher levels with Scottish or English or Irish, white people, in a word. And it was frowned upon for a local person, for a colonial, a British person, to marry a local person. What Flory objects to in Burmese days is that. He says, he has a great argument with Veeraswamy in it. And Veeraswamy's defending. He said, I know there are a lot of bad people, but think they brought civilization, they brought law, they brought schools and so forth. And Flory, who's a very good debater, refutes all those points that Veeraswamy makes and says, no, you don't understand. He said, the natives are seen as less than us. And then Veeraswamy says, but you're my friend, and that's the proof that you're good people, because you're a good person and you're kind to me, and we're talking, we're having a cup of tea and so forth. And so Veeraswamy puts it in human terms. But so they go on debating it. Veeraswamy is virtually the only friend that Flory has in the book. And it's interesting that actually Eric Blair apparently made no friend. He may have had an Indian friend. In my book, he has an Indian friend, but he never really made friends there. When he turned the page afterwards, he never went back to India, never went back to Burma, and never corresponded with anyone there. He basically left it. In the same way, Flory kills himself at the end because he's rejected by this woman. It's not a believable ending. I mean, does a person, you know, in Burma, is he that hard up that a woman rejects him, he shoots his dog and then shoots himself? I mean, that seems a little bit far-fetched. But I mean, I think that's the kind of book that Orwell wanted to write. It's a bit of melodramatic. But all the points he makes about colonialism with Veeraswamy in the book are well made. And I adopted them in my book. I mean, I reflected those attitudes in my book.
In 1946, George Orwell wrote a short essay called Why I Write. And it includes this passage where he's talking about himself as a young writer. He says this, quote, "I wanted to write enormous naturalistic novels with unhappy endings, full of detailed descriptions and arresting similes, and also full of purple passages in which words were used partly for the sake of their sound," unquote. And then he continues and he says, "Burmese Days is rather that kind of book," unquote. Do you agree? Is that what kind of book Burmese Days is?
He's hard on his book. Actually, Orwell was very hard on his early books. Now, he wrote, as you know, Coming Up for Air, A Clergyman's Daughter, Keep the Aspidistra Flying, and three novels, and he said he never wanted them republished. He wasn't happy with Burmese Days. Is Burmese Days as bad as he is saying in that? No. It's a very good book. It's a very good book. It's just a young man's book. It's a portrait of Burma in its time. The trouble with it is Orwell didn't put enough of himself and his experience in it. I mean, Orwell, as Blair the policeman, was posted in about five different places in Burma. The Delta, two places in the Delta, Mulmain, where he had relatives, Rangoon, insane, where there's a prison. I mean, he was associated with a prison, which is a prison to this day, and then in Katha. But he only wrote about this one place, Katha. He could have written about the prison. He could have written about the people in Mulmain, his relatives. You know, he could have fictionalized them. There's a lot he could have put in. He could have put in the training. I mean, he was in training for almost 2 years, on probation, rather, for almost 2 years, and of a year and a half in Mandalay. None of that's in the book. None of it. And I mean, it's a rich in experience and detail. But he's hard on the book. I think the book is better than he says it is, but not as good as the critics have said it is.
Orwell was a great essayist, of course. We tend to think of him first as a novelist because of 1984 and Animal Farm and so on, but he's a remarkably good essayist. He wrote two of his best-known essays about Burma. One's called A Hanging from 1931, and the other is Shooting an Elephant from 1936. So one before the publication of the novel Burmese Days, one after. Paul, there's a debate about these essays, whether they're truthful memoirs of things he actually saw. Did he actually witness a hanging? Did he actually shoot an elephant? Or are they fictionalized? Are they short stories? What do you make of these two pieces by George Orwell?
Well, first I can say, I mean, if you allow me to say so, when his widow was asked by a biographer about the elephant, she said she was in a restaurant and she said very loudly, of course he shot a fucking elephant. What do you think? And everyone in the restaurant looked up. And Bernard Crick, the biographer, hit his head. The hanging, it's impossible to imagine someone writing that essay, that memory of a hanging, who hadn't seen a hanging. All the detail in it tells you he had to have seen it or been present at a hanging. It had to be so. And I would say, he worked at a prison, and he was there for an extended period, 6 or 7 months at a prison, where there were a lot of hangings. There are hangings there now. It's called Insane Prison. It was a panopticon prison. So I would say, yes, maybe not in quite the same circumstances, because we know from, for example, if you read his diaries, that his book, The Road to Wigan Pier, there's an incident in it where he sees a woman cleaning out a sewer pipe, and he describes her face and the circumstances. And from his diary, it's a completely different version. She's cleaning out a sewer pipe, but it's different. In other words, he fictionalized, or he improved things. He added detail. He made it more dramatic. Writers do that. I mean, he was that kind of writer. In my opinion, I don't think he had a great imagination. I think Orwell was very derivative. 1984 is a derivative novel. It's derivative from a novel called We by Evgeny Zamyatin. And a lot of the details in 1984 you find in Zamyatin's novel. But as far as the hanging. I would say when you read that, you see he had to have seen it. One of Orwell's heroes was Jack London. And there's a short story by Jack London called Echenego. It's set in Tahiti. It's about a man who's hanged, and unfairly. The man, there's a name, he's Chinese. They get his name wrong. They realize it's the wrong guy. And they said, well, it's a hot day. He's a native. He's Chinese. We might as well hang him. It's, you know, we've gone this far. And that's the kind of unfairness that all tend to dwell on. As far as, so I believe the hanging. I just think that he improved it as, you know, as people do. He says in Shooting an Elephant, that's very descriptive. It's very dramatic. It's a wonderful piece. It's better, actually, than a hanging. And he's making a point there, which is he shot the elephant because of pressure that the locals expected him to shoot the elephant. The elephant really didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he caused mayhem. He was in a fit of heat, must, they call it. And the elephant has settled down. There's no good reason to shoot him. Elephants are valuable. And the pressure of the people watching him, they expect a sahib, a white man, the policeman, to do the right thing. You know, shoot the elephant, and then they're all watching him. And he feels a lot of pressure to do it. And he thinks that's the despotism of empire, that you do things that you really don't want to do. And he was ashamed of that. Actually, he really did shoot the elephant because, as his widow said, yes, he did shoot it. It was a disgrace. It was so disgraceful that he was moved. That was in Moulmein. He was moved to this post in the middle of nowhere, his last post. And it was spoken about that people at the time spoke about what a bad thing he did. You know, that he let the side down. You know, he shot this elephant. Elephants were valuable. They helped carry logs back and forth. The teak trade depended on elephants, and he did it. So the pressure came from the people in the teak industry. One of your men shot an elephant. Get him out of here. He quit the police 7 months later.
Your new novel is Burma Sahib. It just came out. It's brand new. It's excellent. I really enjoy reading it. Paul, what was your inspiration to write a novel about Eric Blair, the future George Orwell, during his time in Burma?
Well, first, I went to Burma. I've been to Burma three times. I went there very early, 1970, when I was a teacher in Singapore. I went when it still looked like old Burma. I mean, it was still decrepit. All the colonial buildings were still standing. It didn't develop the way India did. I mean, it was always kind of a backward province. Orwell said it wasn't ready for independence even. So I've been there. I can relate to it. So when I was very young, I joined the Peace Corps, and I became a teacher in the British territory of Nyasaland 7 months before independence. So I had an experience of British colonialism as a very young man, as a Peace Corps volunteer in a British colony. And it really marked me. I could say, well, that experience of seeing how the territory, this British territory, was run made a deep impression on me. The other is I was going to medical school. I was planning to go to medical school. This changed my character. This was just one of those episodes that changed my character, my experience of Africa. So I thought, well, this is the shortest chapter in any Orwell biography is the chapter about Orwell as a young policeman named Eric Blair. And I thought, there's got to be more to it than that. I mean, he was there for a long years, you know, and they never speculate. I mean, when you read a biography, they say, well, Orwell wrote a poem about prostitutes, but we don't know whether he ever went to a brothel. Well, he's 19, 20 years old. There's a lot of prostitution. It costs 25 rupees. He's got the money. He's young. He'd never had a love affair. He was actually later life quite a womanizer. You think, of course he did. Did he get drunk? Of course he did. Did he make mistakes? Of course he did. He's young. He's in his early 20s. Any if a biographer is a guy, if it's a guy and he was once 19, 20 years old, you can't speculate on what actually happened. Well, if you write a biography, you're dealing in facts. If you're a novelist, you don't need facts. All you need is a few facts and you can elaborate on that. So I elaborate. So what drew me to it was the rich possibilities of a young man, virtually a teenager in the beginning, in a British colony, with everything at his fingertips. I mean, he has power, he has money, he has servants, he's got a girlfriend. I mean, he slept with his house girl in Burmese days. Flory has a lover. Do you think that Orwell was writing about Flory's Burmese lover never having had a Burmese lover? Well, of course he did. So I just took the opportunity of writing this, and I was thrilled to write it. It's as good as anything I've written, and it was really great fun to write. It's a lot. Writing a novel is a lot of trouble. It took me 2 years to write, but it's full of possibilities and explains a lot of what happened to Blair later in life as George Orwell.
And that's one of the things I've really enjoyed about Burma Sahib is you have all kinds of moments in this novel when you're pointing us toward who he would become later. You're explaining things he would write about later. You are showing us the way toward the formation of this young man who went on to write these great things.
Well, yes. I mean, the prison that he was in is called a panopticon. It's a round prison. It looks like a wagon wheel or a mandala. At the center of it, it was invented by Jeremy Bentham. At the center is a watchtower. The watchtower can see every cell on the rim of this round prison. That struck me as being a kind of an indication of what he would do in 1984, where you have Big Brother who can see, and with his surveillance, you can see every person there. Another thing that struck me, if you read a lot of Orwell, you see one of his things, first is the rats. I mean, he's obviously afraid of rats and a lot of rats in Burmese days. One of the things that I noticed in reading Orwell's work is his sense of smell. He's constantly talking about smells, the odor. In The Road to Wigan Pier, he talks about the smell, the working class's smell. He also later talks about how his soldiers sweating on the road, his men sweating, how they smelled. He's disgusted by their smell. And you know that in one of his political essays, he talks about orthodoxies, smelly little orthodoxies. Well, if you're a novelist and you have a character who has a strong sense of smell, if you look at Burma Sahib, you'll see there's a lot of odors, aromas, perfume, stinks, smells, fragrances. It's full of it because Blair, later Orwell, was highly sensitized to smell. So that's one of the things you can run with if you're a novelist. If you're a biographer, not so much.
You're working in the genre of what we might call historical fiction. When you do that, when you're dealing with a person from real life, a person who actually lived, Eric Blair in Burma, how do you balance fact and fiction? How do you balance what we actually know about this guy and his experience with the blank canvas that's the rest of his reality there?
Well, you're extrapolating. You have a fact. You have a poem by Orwell about a prostitute, a very sweet prostitute. He offers her 20 rupees, and she's very sweet. She bats her eyes, and she says 25. And so from that, I mean, okay, it's a little poem. It's 8 lines or, you know, maybe not much more. You could build up, you can write a chapter on that. I mean, you know what a brothel is like. You know what the Burmese are like. You know what prostitution is. You just have this guy, he's 20 years old, and you build from a fact. That the poem is a factual account of a prostitute asking for money or shooting an elephant. I mean, he's in Moulmain, I know, but you find out about Moulmain. I've been there. It's not hard to build a chapter. I have a whole chapter. It's called Sacrifice, but shooting the elephant. And it's more. It's all the circumstances of it. So you build from that. You build from what you know. You extrapolate from what you know, and it's much better not to know too much. Henry James used to sit at a table. Someone would tell him a story. They start telling him a story, and he'd say, "Stop, stop, stop! Don't tell me any more. I can write something about this." But if I know too much, it will impede my writing. If you know too much, it's hard to write a historical novel. It's much better to build from a fact and use your imagination, I think.
In Burma Sahib, we see a lot of references to reading. We get a sense that Orwell himself was a reader. What was your research like reading into Orwell the reader?
Well, he was a great reader, and he read a lot. I mean, so he talks constantly about his heroes, H.G. Wells, Tolstoy, Jeremy Bentham, Somerset Maugham. He was a tremendous reader later in the 30s of Henry Miller. He loved Tropic of Cancer, and he met Henry Miller on his way to Spain. So my method was to read everything that Orwell had written, then everything written about him, all the biographies. There are 7 biographies. I read all the biographies, and then read all the books that he referenced. Another, read all the books that he read, all the books about him, and then all the books about Burma. If you read, then if you have this total immersion in books, in the reading about him, by him, and about the place, then you're well prepared, and you have a lot of reference points that are easily usable. So that's what I did.
When did you become a reader of George Orwell yourself? What's your story there?
Well, it was at school. I mean, I suppose when I was at college. And then the great revelation to me was when I was in Africa. So I was in Africa for 6 years. I read Orwell on colonialism, politics, and the English language. I read his books about Spain. I taught his work. I taught Animal Farm is a great book to read. I lived in 2 dictatorships. If you live in a dictatorship, the students read Animal Farm, and they immediately recognize the mechanics, the drama of that book. So it's just, you know, if you're writing a historical novel, you need to be immersed in everything, the books by and about. It's a great labor, actually. It's a lot of trouble, but I mean, there's no point. You can't just sit there spinning your wheel and inventing. It needs to be based on factual experience and on the facts at hand. But there's plenty to do with it. I mean, think of all the essays that Orwell wrote about reading. I mean, it's great, actually. And in his diaries, in the columns that he wrote, his collected works are 20 volumes. I haven't read all 20, but I've read most of them. There was a collection in 1968, his collected works. I read all of that. So I was prepared to do it, and I think, you know, I'm happy with the result, and I'm glad you are too.
One more question. Many people who've read George Orwell, of course, know him from 1984. Also Animal Farm. Burmese Days is not going to be the first thing by George Orwell anyone reads, I suppose. But Paul, what's the case for reading Burmese Days now?
The case is that in 1923, he was in Burma and he read Passage to India and he thought it was okay. I think that Burmese Days is his reply to E.M. Forster to Passage to India. In Passage to India, Forster never really writes about the horrors of imperialism, the horrors of colonialism. There's no hanging, there's no beating, there's no blood, there's no cruelty, there's bad manners. And I think that what he wanted to do was write about the reality of colonialism, how vicious it is, how cruel it is, and how horrible the people are. They're not just unpleasant the way they are in a lot of the whites in Passage India. They're really horrible. They're really objectionable, vile people. And I think that's the case. The case is it's written, you know, by a guy who's fresh from his post. And it's kind of, as I say, I think it's a kind of a reply to Forster. And it's a portrait of Burma as it was. It's not everything that he knows. He didn't write about everything he knows. But I mean, it inspired me. I mean, I thought it was a wonderful book. The more you know about Orwell, though, and the more you know about Blair, and Blair's experience, you realize he didn't fulfill his mission. He didn't. There's so much more he could have done. And I felt, okay, he didn't do it, so I'll do it. I'll write about the police. I'll write about the cruelty. I'll write about the things that happened to him that he didn't write about.
Paul Theroux, thanks so much for joining us and telling us all about Burmese Days by George Orwell.
Thank you, John.
You've just listened to The Great Books Podcast, a production of National Review. Please subscribe to The Great Books Podcast and leave reviews of the show. That helps us keep this podcast going. Send me your ideas for future episodes. You can reach me through our website at heymiller.com. On Twitter, my handle is at heymiller. Last of all, special thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Great Books Podcast.